Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 10th, 2010, and you're listening to show number 27 of Who's Reading the Organon. We'll be reading aphorism number 285, the foot and the footnote. So we're going to finish up this week's discussion. And remember, it's just two people chatting on our favorite subject, homeopathy, and you're listening in through the internet. I think I hear Vera on the line.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, everyone.
Hello. I just got a little tweet in my Twitter box, and it says, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. And that was a quote by Henry Ford. So I'm going to say, it's like the glass is half full or half empty. I think we can. And that's starting off on a positive note today.
I would add another element to that. Very often when you think you can't, you can anyway.
You might surprise yourself. And then it's kind of like when you take a test and you walk away. Well, this is many, many years ago in grade school. You walk away out of the test and you just keep telling everybody, I failed, I didn't do good. And then you get it back and you get an A. And it just makes you feel great.
So lately I've had several patients sit opposite me and tell me they can't. And they can't handle things or can't do things. And when I point out to them that actually all the things they're telling me they can't do, they are actually in the process of doing, so clearly they can do them, they're somewhat surprised. It's like an element.
Not to give a prescription, but I hope you gave them a dose of Nux Vomica.
No.
Isn't that typically?
No, I don't prescribe that way.
I was not prescribing. It was kind of a joke, but maybe nobody got it. Okay. On the lighter side, you want to finish up your statement.
What's interesting is it's like an element, a small grain of lack of reason comes in and takes over completely.
Yeah.
You know, like to the point, there was one person recently who was telling me that she's got a family situation, she was saying. She can't handle it. She doesn't know what to do. And she doesn't know what to do. And I asked her what she had been doing. Well, she'd set up all the appointments needed to deal with the situation. She'd set up a plan A and a plan B. She was very clearly on top of it. But this belief that she cannot handle it, cannot do it, not happening, she's overwhelmed, was overwhelming her literally. But it was the belief. It wasn't the reality. That's so curious.
Yeah. It's our perspective. It's the way we view ourselves and the world and everything around us. And you kind of get into a loop. You set yourself up that this is the way it's always been. This is the way it's going to be, even though you might be doing something a little bit different.
I think also that there's something about learning from patients. When someone is sitting opposite us and we see they're saying, I can't, and we see that they're doing it. And to look at that process and bring it into our own.
Yes. Yeah,
and then
we're always learning from what we do and who we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
I have another little, it's a quote. I don't know who said it, but it was sounded so good I thought I would share. This says, "Wisdom is the sharing of wise experiences and knowledge, but a lot of it is common sense. The difference is how we apply this common sense. We all have the ability to keep going even when we face challenges in our lives. Basically, it comes down to your attitude." This is really interesting because it follows up on what you said. We can have a positive attitude towards life or a negative attitude. We can focus on the good or we can focus on the bad. Keeping a positive mental attitude is one of the keys to success. The choice is always up to you. Wow, this whole thing is sort of comes together in one neat little bundle.
It leads to an irresistible tangent. When is a positive attitude or a negative attitude sufficiently pathological to prescribe on?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I always find those rubrics fascinating. I mean, when are you going to use a rubric like cheerful? Are you going to use it because something changed and this misery guts now has chronic pneumonia and is very cheerful?
Uh-huh.
Are you going to use it because this person is at the funeral of his favorite relative and he's grinning from ear to ear? When are you going to take the rubric cheerful? Or are you going to take it simply because you have a happy patient in front of you, which actually seems to be totally crazy because it's not pathological. Why prescribe on it?
Well, perhaps if they're cheerful all the time, no matter what is happening, they're not reflecting in it dynamic in any way to what's happening around them. You know, normally you do respond in some way to, mm-hmm. to your environment or to the events in your life. But if you're consistently happy, maybe you're just a guru, a yoga person who's found a calm, peaceful way to live their life, or not.
Or taking recreational drugs. let's move on to the aphorism. Before I dig my hole even deeper.
Vera, I wouldn't know anything about taking the recreational drugs. It's not part of my life. So, it never was. So, here we are. We're continuing this fantastic week of studying the Organon, Aphorism 284. We did in-depth the power of four, how we apply the remedies, and now we're moving on to 285. We may have started it, but we want to get into the footnote.
Okay, now we read the aphorism, which was relating to rubbing in remedies, possibly at the same time as taking internally and rubbing in on clear skin only. And we started in the footnote where Hanuman mentions that sometimes people feel much better after going to a spa where there's medicinal constituents in the bath. And when the skin is sound and clean, the improvement can sometimes be where those constituents are homeopathically related to the problem that the patient has. But
Okay.
Let's just read. Would you like to read the beginning of the footnote there?
The footnote for Aphorism 285 begins, "From this fact
That's right.
may be explained those marvelous cures, however infrequent, where chronic deformed patients, whose skin nevertheless was sound and clear and clean, were cured quickly and permanently after a few baths whose medicinal constituents by chance were homeopathically related. On the other hand, the mineral baths in caps very often brought on increased injury with patients whose eruptions on the skin were suppressed. After a brief period of well-being, the life principle allowed the inner, uncured malady to appear elsewhere, more important for life and health. So is that all you want to read? Because
Yes, and just the next paragraph, that's the one that we read yesterday as well, of the possible results where the mineral baths were not homeopathic to the case involved and where there were eruptions on the skin.
Okay. Are you reading that part?
I could read it. At times, instead, the ocular nerve would become paralyzed and produce amaurosis. Sometimes the crystalline lens would become clouded, hearing lost, mania, or suffocating asthma would follow, or an apoplexy would end the sufferings of the deluded patient. Did we double-check the meaning of the word amaurosis?
No, I do not recall doing that.
I'm just checking in. Trustee Yaskur?
Okay, well, while you're checking into your resource definition book, I just wanted to mention, you know, Vera, you're right there in Jerusalem and near the Dead Sea. It's very, very common for as a resort and health spa that people do go to the Dead Sea, which is filled with minerals to take care of many skin diseases, psoriasis, eczema, whatever is on the skin. And so this is now coming into my mind whether Hahnemann would approve of this kind of spa treatment.
I think he would totally disapprove. Totally, because the people going there, the people going in generally, he didn't approve. I suggest that we carry on with the aphorism and we'll see exactly how much he didn't approve, because he states it in his own very interesting way. Amaurosis, definition according to Yaskur, partial or total blindness, usually without an apparent lesion or injury of the eye. Okay. So here he was talking about paralysis of ocular nerve. Somebody wrote something about paralysis of ocular nerve recently on HWC, but I don't remember what it was. Let's continue with the aphorism, with the footnote. A fundamental principle of the homeopathic physician, which distinguishes him from every physician from all older schools, is this, that he never employs for any patient a medicine whose effects on the healthy human has not been previously carefully proven and thus made known to him. Now, this is actually a principle of homeopathy that is one that's under huge debate today, because some say you can give remedies even if they haven't been proven. Others say, if you're going to give them, don't call them homeopathy, because the homeopathic physician never employs for any patient a medicine whose effects on the healthy human has not previously been carefully proven. So for Hahnemann, homeopathy was proving, he states it.
It's in black and white. You can't squiggle out of it. There it
is. Right.
And so this is one of your mythbusters. I know you're going to put it up there. That's my nickname for you today. I've been thinking of it.
It's not exactly a myth. It's a principle that a remedy should be proven. But that doesn't negate that if we find something is useful, like I've been in, there are two cases not so long ago where I gave remedies that were not proven. I gave cortisone in potency for a case where there had been suppression with cortisone. I'd been treating with lots of other remedies, reached a point where nothing was helping. I couldn't think of anything else, couldn't find anything else, gave cortisone, it helped. I'm very pleased it helped. It wasn't homeopathy. What I did was not homeopathy. It was isopathy. Uh-huh. It was using the same agent that probably caused. And in another case, I had a mother potentize her own breast milk after her child fell ill after weaning. And here again, I tried other remedies that were proven, were homeopathic. They didn't help. Last resort, I tried this, it helped. The issue is whether to go and do the proving of these. Maybe there is a proving of cortisone, though. I think I've mentioned that one in previous shows.
There's
anyway.
A proving of breast milk, isn't there?
But let's carry on and hear what Hahnemann says about it. To prescribe for the sick on mere conjecture of some possible usefulness from some similar disease or from hearsay that a remedy has helped in such and such a disease, Such conscious adventure the philanthropic homeopathist will leave to the allopath. A genuine physician and practitioner of our art will therefore never send the sick to any of the numerous mineral bars. There goes the Dead Sea. Oh, well.
There goes.
Because almost all are unknown so far as their accurate positive effects on the healthy human organism is concerned, and when misused, must be counted among the most violent and dangerous drugs. See, he's not in favor of the baths at all. Personally, I think hanging around in a bathrobe is probably harmful as well, but that's besides the point. In this way, one out of 1,000 sent to the most celebrated of these baths by ignorant physicians, allopathically uncured, and blindly sent there, perhaps one or two are cured by chance. More often return only apparently cured, and the miracle is proclaimed aloud. 1 out of 1,000.
Well, he's okay. Even given us a statistic, huh?
He's saying 1 out of 1,000 may apparently be cured, and everyone will say it's a cure, it's a miracle. Hundreds, meanwhile, sneak quietly away, more or less worse, and the rest remain to prepare themselves for their eternal resting place. A fact that is verified by the presence of numerous well-filled graveyards surrounding the most celebrated of these spas. Don't you love Hahnemann's black humor? He's brilliant.
He's putting you under the ground.
I don't know if it's still true whether the spas are surrounded by graveyards.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Huh?
But it could be.
Should be some serious research.
Kaviraj sends us a message, and he says that Hahnemann says that isopathy is homeopathic after the preparation of the substance in potency. So you have prescribed on the effects of the crude, which was approving. Do you understand that?
If Kaviraj would like to post a reference, it would be very interesting for people to read.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe he has some understanding of this that we need to take a look at.
Hahnemann speaks earlier in the Organon of Isopathy, but makes clear that isopathy is not homeopathy. Homeopathy
right.
is based on the law of similars, not on the law of sames. And isopathy,
right.
by its very nature, is the law of the same, of using the same thing. I know that other people do that in desperation, but there's a difference between working on the basis of a law and a rule, which, if appropriately used, will lead to a cure, or on the basis of giving something based on conjecture. Like, I couldn't know that cortisone would help my patient. I couldn't know that the self-made breast milk would help. Nothing else was helping. And at the end of the day, what you have is someone who's in suffering and is turning to you for help. So you do what you know to do. But
okay,
that
so
wasn't
I mean, we do have homeopathic milks such as Lacaninum, and now we have Lacumanum and Lacmaternum. So, you know, through your own desperation, and perhaps you did use some intuition or realization that there was a similar symptoms going on, that it did work for your cases.
The prescription of having the mother potentized her breast milk was made because there was no way for her to get to a pharmacy to try anything else. She had to rely on what she had at home, and the only thing she had at home was previous remedies that did not work in this particular case. So it was a question basically of that or nothing. So under those
right.
circumstances, I did what I think most homeopaths would do, however stringent. You look for a way to help your patient. But let's read what I call the toe notes, which is when someone writes a footnote to a footnote, it's a toe note.
And what do you call it? A toe note?
Yeah. Well, he has a toe note here. A true homeopathic physician, one who never acts without correct fundamental principles, never gambles with the life of the sick entrusted to him as in a lottery, where the winner is in a ratio of 1 to 500 or 1,000, blanks here consisting of aggravation or death, will never expose any one of his patients to such danger and send him for good luck to a mineral bath, as is done so frequently by allopaths, in order to get rid of the sick in an acceptable manner spoiled by him or others. So here you get the question. You have a patient who comes to a conventional doctor with complaints and more complaints and more complaints. The doctor tries to do what he can with the drugs, doesn't help. So the doctor in desperation says, you know what, why don't you go to a spa? First of all, it will place you far away from me. Secondly, who knows, it might suppress something nicely and then you'll feel you're cured. This is what Hahnemann was fighting in his day, and I think the same thing still exists today. At some point, it's difficult also for us as homeopaths. Sometimes you have a patient who you think you're helping and then they come back with something else. And then you think you're helping them and they come back with something else. And then you think, I can't help this patient. And if this patient keeps coming up, let's refer him to another homeopath. No, he wants to stay. There are these stories. There are these situations where you start thinking, well, what can I do here?
Uh-huh. What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
So then you potentize what's at hand, like breast milk. And when I studied with Robin Murphy, he had a whole class on remedies from your kitchen cabinet. And mm-hmm. so there are many, pepper and all sorts of different things.
But what I found over the years, actually, what you can do when there's a case that just isn't resolving, I find that there are so many homeopaths who are willing to consult on the lists, on HWC, on other lists. You just pop a question uh-huh. out into cyber.
Right. You do want to get some advice from other people.
There's another aspect also that I find is very helpful, especially for those of us homeopaths who are not MDs, to consult an MD, to consult someone who's open-minded, broad-minded, and to see if there is something going on with a patient that we are not understanding, something that we're not seeing. It's possible that there's even a symptom that we're not noticing because we don't realize there's a certain kind of syndrome involved. So I think the whole aspect of consulting with others who are more knowledgeable than us, or who can even just bring a fresh perspective, can be very helpful.
Yes, that's one of the things. Two heads are better than one, and it's always good to see it in a new way. They might have a different take on it. There was something earlier in this particular aphorism that caught my attention. Let's see. It was something about the proving. Homeopathy is based upon proving. This differs from the way drugs are now given. Medications are designed to treat a variety of health conditions, but sometimes they can have unwanted side effects, including...
Where are you reading from?
Oh, I guess I'm reading my own notes, including changes to the hair. So what I'm thinking is, this was kind of a take that I got on it, that... Very often, today, drugs are not made from provings, which is one of the things that you were emphasizing from this aphorism and the footnote that it is a principle. And so what I'm saying is that one of the principles is homeopathy and its proving, but that today drugs are given based on very often serendipity or happenstance, or they came along and, you know, they were manufacturing one drug and they got another symptom coming out. And then they said, okay, let's use this drug for that. And one of the things that came to mind was changing side effects that were used for people who want to grow their hair, because there's a lot of alopecia out there. So certain drugs can contribute to this excess hair growth and changes in hair color and texture or hair loss. And one of the drugs is Propecia or Rogaine, and it's one of the only proven hair loss medication options that is actually approved by the FDA for treating hair loss. But the problem about it is that its original name, minoxidil, was created as a drug for treating hypertension, high blood pressure. So now you're going to be giving this drug to somebody because he wants to grow, he or she wants to grow their hair, but we don't know what it's going to do to their blood pressure, to their cardiovascular system and their heart. So it's not a totality in the same way that homeopathy is.
Well,
go ahead.
The basic principle, I think what Hahnemann was building towards and trying to help us as practitioners develop is certainty and security in prescribing. Now, when I gave the breast milk, I had no idea if it would help. When I gave the cortisone, I also had no idea. It was based on a conjecture. It wasn't based on any law. It wasn't based on knowledge of how these remedies react in healthy people, what kind of symptoms they can cause, and whether I have a similar picture. It was conjecture, a hunch, a possibility. Hahnemann doesn't want us to practice that way. He wants us to practice in a way that we see the case and we give the remedy and we know exactly what that remedy will do. And I don't know about you, Debbie, but the times that I work that way and the times that I see the remedy, I take the case, see the remedy, give the remedy, and I know, I'd say with a certainty of 90 to 100% that this remedy will do what I want it to do. That's
right.
The way to work. It's a totally different feeling. It means I don't have to fly on a hunch, and
right.
I don't have to fly on sixth sense. I'm flying on information that I use.
But so you're castigating yourself. You're feeling really, really guilty, and
no.
Both of those times it actually worked. And because you were out of possibilities, nothing that you were.
No, I'm not castigating myself at all, because what I did is the same as the famous remedy, which is the WYAH30C, right? What you have at home, 30C. That's the most famous remedy of all. I'm not castigating myself at all, because the situations were extreme situations where I did the only thing that I felt was possible at the time. And fortunately, the results seem to have borne that out. On the other hand, I feel that however far we get in our practice, we can always learn to do better. And I feel that aspiring to a situation where all our prescribing is certain, all our prescribing is based on, I know what this remedy will do. I know what results it will get. I took the case, I saw the remedy, I gave it, and I know that the patient will be doing better on this remedy. Now, that's a way to work. There's a certain joy and a pleasure in it, which you don't get from conjecture. Conjecture leaves you with uncertainty in prescribing. And what Hahnemann is saying, he takes it to a further extreme. He says a true homeopathic physician never gambles. So it's not, conjecture is gamble. If I'm working with a remedy that has proven symptoms and those symptoms fit the law of similars in my patient, if my case taking was accurate, I'm not gambling.
Okay. Vera, time is really up, so I'm going to close with no gambling and no baths. That's our umbrella statement. Kaviraj did say something to us with the footnote, and let's see if I can say it really quickly. The potentized matter produces more symptoms than the original and is, by the process of dynamization, different from the organic or original morbific matter. Therefore, it is not truly isopathic, but has become a homeopathic remedy. And this is footnote to aphorism 56. I'm saying goodbye and have a great week to everyone. Great weekend.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.